Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for Standing on My Soapbox, the weekly rant, rave, and review radio show where we talk all of the good, the bad, and the ugly of the past week's current events. Join your host, Scott Fullerton, and this week's special guest co-host,
Stan Zimmerman.
You're also invited to call in and stand on my soapbox with us. Call now at 347-989-0126 to join the conversation. Now, here he is, stepping up to the microphone, your host, Scott Fullerton.
Howdy, howdy, everyone. We haven't put music behind our intro yet, but welcome to the show, guys. It is Wednesday, January 23rd. January 23rd. My goodness, it's past that. It's the 25th already. I am so behind. I want to welcome everyone to the show today. My co-host is a writer, director. He's worked on such iconic shows as The Golden Girls, Gilmore Girls, Roseanne, some Brady Bunch movies, and so much more. Please step up on the soapbox. It's your turn, my hero, Stan Zimmerman. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, except I left my phone on in the studio here, but that's okay.
Who's calling?
I don't know. I hope it's someone.
It's probably your mother, right?
Exactly, really. Scott, have you started your show yet?
I think my mother just called on my other line, so.
There you go.
We got some mothers,
hey, welcome
yeah.
to the show, Stan Zimmerman. How are you?
I'm doing great, you know, except I hate to bring this up, but we are in mourning today for the wonderful Mary Tyler Moore.
It is a very sad day indeed. Of course, like we were talking off air, we almost got through January without one of our major heroes passing away. And at 80 years old today, Mary Tyler Moore left us. And very sad. We got a little her theme music, if you remember it, of course. Play a little bit here.
It's interesting. That was one of the songs in a musical that I co-created with Christian McLaughlin, and it's called It's On, and it's a TV theme song jukebox musical, and we used over 40 TV theme songs in a book musical, and that, of course, is so iconic and was one of them, so that's bringing back a lot of memories. And we did a big workshop out here a few years ago with Megan Hilty from Smash and Cheryl Lee Ralph, original Dreamgirls, and Mindy Sterling from Austin Powers and Nolan Funk and actually Alan Thicke was a little special guest. So.
Oh wow. Oh,
yeah, between Alan Thicke and Gary and Mary, it's been a sad couple of months. But you know, the important thing is for us to remember, you know, the joy that they brought all of us. I know for Mary Tyler Moore, unfortunately, I never met her, but if it wasn't for the Dick Van Dyke Show, I don't think I probably would have become a TV writer. I didn't even know what that was. And,
wow.
You know, she played Dick Van Dyke's wife on that show, and he, you know, went to work every day in the city and on this TV show, and he sat in a room, you know, with Maury Amsterdam and Rose Marie and wrote comedy shows, and that's kind of all of a sudden went in my head, wait a minute, this is what I can do with all of my crazy ideas and energy. And it just seems such a fun way to hang out all day long. And just
right.
And sometimes it can be that way, and then other times you get on some shows and it's not. But so that really gave me the idea. And then, of course, the Mary Tyler Moore Show, it was so iconic and so beautifully written, and the characters were so distinct. And it was such an important piece at the time. I don't know if you or some of your listeners will know, but they were going to make the Mary Tyler Moore character a divorcee. And at the time, that was just thought of as too controversial. People won't like her
right.
if she's divorced. So they made her a single gal, you know, making it on her own. And another interesting little full circle moment, which I think the older you get, the more full circle moments you get.
Right.
2 years ago, I got to spend two-month stints in Moscow with Sony International, helping them develop a Russian Roseanne series. And while I was there, they asked me if I would help them also develop a Russian Mary Tyler Moore show.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, my goodness is right. So I went back because, you know, I was so little when I watched it, and I just had these memories of it. And so I had to go back and, you know, literally read the pilot. They sent me the script of it, of the original script, and then I started just watching episode after episode, and it was so well constructed. And it was interesting because I had a young translator in his mid-20s who obviously had never seen or heard of the show, and
right.
He was so good at his job. He would, went home and he would watch all the episodes, and then when we would be stuck in Moscow traffic, which you are on the way to work, we would talk about the show, and he's like, it's so funny. I mean, the characters are so strong. And, you know, we talked about how you wouldn't really have to change that much because it still holds up. You know, they're all such different types.
Right. And you would know better than most. I mean, it's pretty commonplace now. Well, not as much anymore, but spinoffs was what they were. Did like 3 spinoffs of that show. Was it that commonplace back then?
Everyone always thought it was a good way because you knew the characters, but they did Rhoda and Phyllis were spinoffs. So those, and they were very successful. I mean, Rhoda was really successful. Those are such great characters. The interesting thing about in Moscow that we had a hard time explaining to the writers there, why a 30-year-old woman would not accept a marriage proposal and instead choose on her own accord to start a life anew and to start on a job. And the people at the job became her family. And how important it was for her to literally make it on her own. It's so different there. I mean, that's why I thought it. I mean, they're still working on it, that it could actually work over there, because they are many years behind us as far as the women's movement.
Sure.
So that's still a thing that you would, of course, have to get married, and you, that's your kind of your role is to get married and start a family, and you would never turn anyone down, you know, to be on your own. What's wrong with you? And the exciting thing was I was also in charge of hiring a writer for it, and I got to hire a woman writer, which was also kind of unheard of there.
Nice. Wow.
But it was a woman that actually worked in a news organization in Russia, and she's actually a single mom, and so that was really cool to work on that. But it was interesting. I don't know. Are you really familiar with the Mary Tyler Moore Show?
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, just their idea of, you know, Rhoda being so kooky and crazy. I remember in one of the drafts they had written something about, and Rhoda comes in with a tuba. And I'm like, why? And they're like, well, it's funny. And I'm like, but Rhoda, she was cool. She wasn't just, like, weird and quirky. She was hip and you know,
right.
Those scarves that she wore. And she was just, she came from New York, and she was, you know, for Minneapolis, it was a big deal.
No, she was the cool one. And then Phyllis and Lars. Phyllis was the square, and it was I remember a lot about the show. I saw quite a bit of it.
Yeah, as did I. So I'm going to choose to remember all the wonderful things and how it really affected so many people. And you know, you look on social media, and just so many actors and writers and people, you know, just would be able to laugh and on a Saturday night and enjoy so many hours of what this woman gave us. And then for me also, a strong memory of her is Ordinary People. Did you ever see that movie?
Yes, of course.
Yeah,
that
I
was
mean,
one
just,
of the first Timothy Hutton movies, I think.
Yeah, I mean, just when I hear that music of Pachelbel, the classical music, I just want to start crying. And it was a very big deal for her to get that job because she was always known as America's sweetheart. And I remember reading about it, and they were afraid to hire her because they thought, how could she play that role? She's just, you know, but she was so icy and cold, and you just feared her, and she was so fantastic in that. And that really, to me, showed what a great actress she was, besides being, you know, obviously a fabulous comedian.
Right.
And we still use, when we create shows, we talk about that Mary Tyler Moore, just
archetype.
The fact that she was the calm center of all these crazy people.
Right.
And when you're constructing a show, you know, we'll often say she's the Mary Tyler Moore. And here's a transition for you into my web series. I just thought of this. Sex and Execs, we actually have a Mary Tyler Moore reference.
Nice. Oh, my
Isn't
goodness.
Isn't that weird? Because I don't know if you remember from her from the series, she would always throw these horrible parties that nobody would come to.
Everyone hated going to them.
Yeah, so one of the jokes is that it's an office party, and one of the executives leaves the party and says, "Oh my God, it's like a Mary Tyler Moore party out there. It's so bad."
Oh, that's going to resonate so much when that comes on. Oh my gosh, I can't wait to talk with Ellen Warren a bit too.
Yeah, so you can see that she's really affecting me in so many different ways. I'm sure there's many more, but it's just so ingrained in you, you know, that and it's so unusual for anybody, writer or anybody in this business, to be lucky enough to be in more than one, to be in one successful series, but for her to have two that are literally classics, it's pretty extraordinary. And then just having, you know, her with her ex-husband Grant Tinker starting MTM, which is a huge production company that brought us Hill Street Blues and St. Elsewhere and so many great shows.
And then Grant went on to marry Lucy, right?
Lucy?
Did Grant
Lucy a Ball?
Yeah, who's
no,
that?
No,
Grant?
No. And he just died last. He just died last year as well.
I know it was some big wig exec that married Lucy. I thought it was Grant Tinker.
A guy named Joe Morton did, I think.
Oh, okay, maybe that's it. All right.
Yeah,
all
after.
Right. I don't know why I thought it was the other.
After the Desi Arnaz.
Right.
Situation.
The situation, yes.
Yeah, let's call it a situation. I don't know that. I mean, I know they had a very complicated relationship.
Right.
And you'll have to get Lucy Arnaz on here to talk about it.
Oh, that would be amazing. I loved her and her little brother Desi. I watched all the Lucy shows too. That was my era. I watched all those shows when they were happening. I was a young kid, but I loved myself the TV, and it just amazing.
Yeah, I was obsessed with television, and because I was a scrawny little kid that didn't play sports, I would hang out in my bedroom, and I created my own TV network. And I would schedule 7 days a week against all the major networks, all the different shows. And I made a whole grid. And if a show got canceled that I really liked, I would put it on my network. And, you know, I would have, you know, big announcement meetings and interviews. And, you know, so my imagination was slightly warped.
I love it. Yeah, just the first things that came to my mind, I mean, it's just – she had those two iconic characters were actually so totally different. When you think of Dick Van Dyke, sure, she was like the perfect housewife, totally housewife because of the era and everything. Then she's married Tyler Moore, and they chose to go the direction of the person that's on her own. And such great, you have this Women's March came about last week, and just she was one of the cons of that movement when you think about it.
It's interesting. Her career kind of followed where women went. I mean, women were housewives back in the 50s and early 60s.
Right.
And then she was like the perfect housewife for so many people. You know, that, and then to go from that to the early 70s to be iconic in women being on their own and in the workplace and, you know, having their own positions and all of that, she was right there at the forefront too. You know, whether how much that is with her or just, you know, luck that she happened to be working on those characters, you know, at the same time. And that's why everyone says, like, how do you make a hit TV show? It's just, you know, it's like magic in a bottle, we always say. And she really was, you know, quite lucky and quite talented.
Well, and it's funny, I didn't think about it. I don't remember it at the time because it was so long ago, back in the 70s. But I was bebopping around watching little TV while we were getting ready for the show. And one of my heroes, Bob Newhart, was on being interviewed about Mary Tyler Moore.
Oh.
And he brought up, which I totally forgot, back then in the 70s when Mary was on, they called themselves Murder Show. That Saturday night block had 8 o'clock All in the Family, 8:30 MASH, 9 o'clock Mary Tyler Moore, 9:30 Newhart, and 10 o'clock Carol Burnett.
I know, believe me, I was glued to that. I wasn't a MASH fan. They lost me at MASH.
I was a latecomer to MASH. I think I was a rerun MASH, but I ended up liking it eventually.
And wasn't the Jeffersons also in there too? I feel like that
probably
was
probably at one point or another. This is just what he referenced. I didn't even remember it, but it's like that's such a powerhouse. When you think of TV powerhouse nights, I mean, that compares to the old NBC Thursdays of Friends era. But it's just
I
like,
was always sad when the networks gave up on Saturday nights because I thought that was, you know, it was a night. You know, when you're a kid, you could watch television, and we wanted something. You know, as we were getting older, something intelligent and still really funny.
Right.
So I always thought that was an appreciated market, and hopefully somebody, you know, will come up with some good shows. You know, but now it really doesn't matter what day they're on because you find them where you want to find them.
Oh, there's just so many of them now. Yeah, we'll talk about
oh
that.
Oh my God, can they just stop already? every time I turn around, I feel like I drive in LA and there's this billboard of that show and this and that and all these networks and now like networks that, you know, shouldn't even be doing scripted shows. They're doing them, but I think it's great because, you know, in all seriousness, that is given so many opportunities to, you know, so many new people writing and directing and acting, and it's pretty, I think, an exciting time.
Exactly.
In the business.
All right, well, guys, I can see you out there listening live. Don't be shy if you want to call in. Comment on anything Stan and I talk about today. If you want to ask Stan about any of his magnificent work, 347-889-0126 is the line. You'll be able to hear the show while you're on hold there, and we will get to you as soon as we can. So I see you out there. Don't be afraid to call in. Let's transition a little bit and stay on the television mode for a second, Stan. What are you thinking, being so prolific in the industry, about all these reboots we have coming on? I want to talk Gilmore Girls first because, of course, you were a huge part of that. But we just got Queer Eye mentioned today and Will and Grace last week.
I know,
one
I'm
day
waiting
to time.
My offer. Which should I be like? Should I be the new Jay Rodriguez?
Exactly. There you go. Is that what you're going to try out for?
I'm going to vibe for that. I think they really need like an old Jew on there.
I think you, me, and Alexander should do a Charlie's Angels pose for the new spring.
Okay. We'll claw our way to get on that show.
Exactly.
I love that show.
Let's start with Gilmore Girls. What did you think? I mean, you were a writer with that show for how many years?
We were just on 1 year. We met Amy Sherman-Palladino, who created that show, on Roseanne, and we just instantly fell in love. I'll never forget. I think it was the first day. We had 21 writers on the show because Roseanne and Tom Arnold were still married at the time, and they would hire all their stand-up comedy friends to work on the show. They weren't writers necessarily, but they were super funny. It was, you know, people like Norm Macdonald and Laura Keitlinger and just great people, Lois Bromfield, and they were learning how to write on it. And so it was just packed with all these crazy funny people, and they were working on a story for Darlene, and they had it all figured out, and then Amy came in late, you know, with her crazy hats and, you know, fishnet, you know, pose or whatever it was. And they pitched her the Darlene story, and she's like, no, Darlene would never do that. And she laid out the reasons why, and she says, but you could do this. And she goes, ba, 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 and explained the whole way it could be done. And my mouth just, like, dropped. I'm like, who the hell is this woman? And I've got to be best friends with her.
Wow.
So we just, like, we hit it off. And then because there were so many writers, we had to break up into different groups to do different jobs on the show.
Okay.
And Amy was usually given the Roseanne Darlene scenes, you know, the scenes when Roseanne would come in and sit on Darlene's bed, and they're beautiful.
Right.
So she would say, all right, I want Jim as my writing partner. Jim and Stan and Lois Bromfield is this insane, wonderful, hysterical lesbian comic.
Wow.
She's like, get in my car. And, of course, I would be, you know, so nervous, like, the other writers will, you know, think we're just goofing off. And she's like, we're going in my car. I don't care what they say. We're going to go have this nice dinner and have a bottle of wine, which, of course, panicked me even more. And then we would come back with these just great scenes. And it was just so honest and yet very funny. And then one time I went with Amy and Lois to a weekend in Vegas, which was a crazy driving trip. So then one day, my writing partner and I, we were on a lot of overall deals at 20th for many years, and Lorimar and Sony. And so she said, meet me at the Chateau Marmont, which is a very – you must go there when you're here, by the way. It's really old school Hollywood. I mean, the bad thing is Jim Belushi died, but we'll move on from that one.
Okay, yeah.
Beautifully decorated, really cool style hotel on Hollywood Boulevard. I mean, on Sunset. And we went to have drinks there, and she said, I want you guys to come on the show. Would you give up developing your own stuff? She was having a hard time finding writers that she clicked with. And I said to her, you know, you're going into your fifth season. It's so well-received show. You should be having the time of your life. So
right.
We said yes, and we made it kind of our mission statement that she was just going to have a really good time that year. And
that's so cool.
And I had only really watched the pilot. I mean, we stayed in touch all through the years. I went to her wedding and all that stuff. And then they're like, okay, you're starting on Monday. And so we literally had a weekend. And at that time, they were still having video cassettes of the shows. So
okay.
Warner Brothers sent over these crates of cassettes. So I had to watch four seasons in a weekend. And I'm like at the beginning, just, oh, my God, how am I going to get through it? And that show just sucks you in. And it's so well done. And the actors are all so fantastic that, you know, by the third episode, I was just, you know, barely eating. I was just, I had to watch the next one, the next one, the next one.
Right.
And it was so wonderful to write on that show and to write for those characters. And I learned so much. I mean, we've done other hour shows, but it was just so great the way to combine drama and comedy together.
Mm-hmm.
And story structure and those long speeches. And when I met Lauren Graham on the very first day of we had a table read, and I just kind of marched over to her and was like, you're not supposed to talk to me.
Who said that?
Are you eating? What are you doing?
Who, me?
Hello? Yeah, what was all that noise?
Oh, I'm sorry. I just moved paper on my computer screen. I didn't know you could hear that. Sorry about that.
And so we were really lucky to be there. And during the 100th episode was that season, and we introduced Logan, and, you know, we got to, you know, help, you know, and bounce ideas off of who should be cast. And I always remind Matt Zuckery, I was like, there were two guys in the lobby, a dark-haired one and this cute blonde, me being Matt. And I was like, he's got to be Logan. And I guess that's why I'm Team Logan.
Although in the revival,
I did not like that he had a fiance and he was sleeping with Rory. I don't think that's right. Do you?
I was not. We'll talk about the revival because I have some thoughts that I want to get by you. But yeah.
But it was fine. We went to the set. I was on the set many days, and I was sworn to secrecy by the things I saw, which was very difficult to do. And then in October, they flew me out to this Gilmore Girls Fan Festival in Washington Depot, Connecticut, which is the little town that the show is based on. And it was so
right.
great to meet all these wonderful fans that came from, you know, all over, from Brazil and England and Mexico, and this fantastic woman, a fan, and her husband literally put this together herself. Netflix did not support it at all.
Really?
Which I don't quite understand to this day why they did that. And then I helped get the casting director from the show there, and I talked to Lauren, and unfortunately she couldn't go. So, you know, I got some answers for the woman that was running it, that, you know, because she wasn't getting kind of responses.
Right.
So it was a really cool experience, and I'm glad I was so successful. I hope they make more.
Oh, me too. I mean,
yeah.
You can't leave it at that ending, even though she wanted that ending. I know how important that was to Amy.
I knew that was the ending. I couldn't remember whether she told us early on, like some drunken night or something, but I knew that's what it was going to be. So
she probably did because she said she knew it from near day one that's how she wanted to end the series. So,
but she didn't tell many people, but we were pretty close. So I think she did tell us that, or I guessed it, and she kind of like, you know, smiled or something. But I was glad it was meant to be. But who do you think is the father?
That's the whole thing. I have no idea. And that's the one thing that upset me the most, the thing that upset me the most on the whole show. And I loved this reunion, loved the show. But the thing that upset me the most on the reunion is I didn't like the way Rory was kind of the entire time. And the thing that got me the most upset is she had that random hookup with the cosplay guy. And it could be his, and that really upsets me because it's like...
You mean the one that Lorelai couldn't remember the name of?
No, remember when she hooked up with the cosplay guy? They were in line when they were doing that whole New York...
Oh, it's not going to be him. I think it's Logan.
It can't be him, I know, but I'm just mad that she did it as a character choice. I thought Rory was so responsible before, and this was her time not to be, and I understand that. It's like, I was mad that she hooked up with the cosplay guy. That's how much of a fan geek I am.
And I mean, in reality, it's a TV show, but I think these are real people. That obviously the whole last line would have been so much better 10 years ago that she got pregnant.
Sure.
Oh, spoiler alert. That kind of would change her life the way it did Lorelai's. You know, now that she's older, it's not quite the same.
Right.
You know.
It doesn't have as much impact, but she still just kind of found herself. So wait a little bit. You'll give her. You have to give them a little bit. I still hope they'll explore it some more and come back again.
Well, when I was on set, I kind of got the sense that they would probably. So I'm hoping they do, or that they wanted to. I got the sense Lauren. I mean, they were all so happy to be back. You know. And,
they seemed it. They really.
Yeah,
did.
They did. So.
Was there anything that surprised you about the reunion or that really that you really liked or really disliked or anything that really surprised you on it?
I thought it was odd that Stars Hollow had a swimming pool. I don't know why that just struck me as like, what? They did? Yeah, I don't know. I wish someone would have told me we could have done something with that. I thought they handled the Edward Herman part so beautifully. I mean, that was just, oh my God, that just got me. And Kelly Bishop, come on. Like, why she's not been nominated for stuff or won for that part? It's just, it's so meaty and she's just so lovely and fantastic. As much as I love Sutton Foster and Kristen Borles, I could have done less with them singing.
Right. Right.
And I know that's a common thing. Only because I wanted, I mean, I love them so much, but I just.
It was fun. Christian Borle, that was a real fun nod. I did like it a lot, but like you said, maybe didn't need as much.
I just wanted to see the other characters, you know, so that was like it was taking time away from, you know, seeing Gypsy and Miss Patty and, you know, so, you know,
right.
Selfishly. And I thought Paris.
Go ahead.
Paris was fantastic. I thought all of her stuff was really great.
Yeah.
She's such a definable character and just so, you know, just doesn't bend, which I think is really, you know, it was fun to write because we got to do a lot of those shows. And Danny Strong was in the episodes we wrote, you know, who's now gone on to co-create Empire and is, you know, a big director and writer.
Well, this is what happened to me because that's how I wasn't sure how many you wrote for because I had stopped watching the show at season 4. Fell in love with the show. Well, this is what happened. I fell in love with the show, watched the 4 season religiously, was not a big VCR taper, and I got a job or something that I couldn't watch it. And so I don't know, and I'm the kind of person, if I don't see something that I don't go – like I've never seen Breaking Bad because I missed the first couple seasons, and I'm not a big binge watcher usually. So it's like, I'd only seen the first 4 episodes, but I loved the show. So I was all excited it was coming back, and I saw the reunion show, and I didn't get a lot of it because
you didn't watch my season
until you wrote them. And that was your scene. So what happened was, after I saw the reunion show, it's like, well, gosh darn it, I don't understand this, and I love the show. So I went back the day after it was on, and I binge-watched 5 through 7.
Oh,
and
thank God.
That's when I saw your name. That's why I didn't know how many you were before because I didn't remember back. I didn't know you back then. I knew you now, so I was looking for you in the credits, but I didn't know how many you did maybe before that season because I thought one of my favorite elements in the return was when the
Brigade,
the Live or Die Club, whatever it's called, came back, rescued Rory, and took her on that one last adventure.
Yeah, so that was
and
all
I didn't know who they
our,
were.
Our year that we created that whole crazy secret society thing.
Exactly. I didn't know who
they
were.
Yeah, those guys were such nut balls and so much fun. And I remember that day we went out, like, way north of L.A., to this place, I think it's called, like, the Ranch or something, and we did that thing where they jump off, like, that high thing with the umbrellas.
Right, uh-huh.
I mean, how insane was that? We're like, I think we're just joking in the room, and then they're like, no, we can do that. I'm like, okay.
Because
it had to be some crazy, scary stunt. And then she locked us in this trailer. She's like, you know, go keep working on the next episode. I mean, that's what happens when you're on a series. You have, you know, the summer to create the arcs and where at least half of the season is going. So we would
right.
go out to their house. They had a second house on the water in Santa Monica. So every day during the summer, we went out there and we would sit in the room, order food in with these whiteboards and go over where we wanted the first half of the season to go. And then once we all break off and we take different episodes and we write them and then rewrite each other's. But once you start filming, you know, you're eating up scripts. So then it just becomes a crunch time. So you're having
right.
to do many, many things at the same time. So while they're filming that, we're off writing other episodes. So,
well, I got to tell you, my favorite episode that I saw you as a writer on was Norman Mailer. Oh, my God. It was just so Melissa McCarthy at her best. And it was just, yeah, you nailed that, my friend.
Oh, it was very exciting to work with him. We were like, who, what name? And oddly enough, I had, when I was in New York, during college, I had, the year after college, I worked in casting, and we had done a reading that I had helped cast of a play about Marilyn Monroe written by Norman Mailer.
Oh, really?
So
wow.
I had, you know, I was just this little kid, and, you know, he didn't really know me, but I did remind him when he did agree to do it. We had to write him this long letter and asking, you know, if he would do the show, and I don't think he really knew what he was getting himself into. But it was great.
It was so good.
It
was
so wonderful. And, yeah, she guest starred on my sitcom Rita Rocks that I did on Lifetime.
Right.
She was doing the Jennifer Lopez movie, The Backup Plan, and my friend Alan Poole was directing it, and they were shooting it on the lot where we were, which is actually the CBS MTM Radford lot. See, it all goes back to Mary Tyler Moore.
Everything does.
And I went over there to say hi, and Melissa's doing the scene, and so we're like hugging, and she's like, well, why don't you invite me to be on your show? And I'm like, okay, and this is all before Bridesmaids. And so I walked back to my staff, and I said, you know Melissa McCarthy from Gilmore Girls? She wants to be on the show. What could we do? So we came up with an episode. You know Michael McDonald from Mad TV?
Right, of course.
Yeah, of course. So we had them play a husband and wife. And, you know, when married couples find another couple that they really like, they kind of glom onto them. So they played this couple that that Nicole Sullivan and her husband really like until the Melissa and Michael's daughter starts acting like a brat. And having Michael McDonald and Melissa McCarthy, and then they all worked together at the Groundlings in L.A., was so hysterical.
Oh, I'll have to look that up. That was for Rita? Okay, I'll have to look that up.
I mean,
oh my
we
goodness.
Said just say our lines that we wrote once, and then you can improv whatever you want. Because they're just brilliantly funny minds, you know, that just come up with stuff just like, I mean, it's just crazy good. So it was fun to reconnect with her. And that was her first time that she had literally done a multicam show. In all her years, she had never done, you know, Samantha Who was a single cam comedy.
Wow.
And she had never worked in front of a live audience. So, you know, this was before Mike and Molly.
That's crazy. Wow. That's
yes,
a cool
crazy.
Story. I love it. Oh, I love that stuff.
So,
man,
I'm very happy for
take,
all her success. And it's
let's
really
go ahead
cool.
and take a quick break. But everyone calling, we're looking for callers, guys. I see you out there. Go ahead and give us a call, 347-989-0126. We're talking with the amazing Stan Zimmerman. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Let's play a little bit of Rabel's 11 Blocks. I'm obsessed with the song lately for some reason. You're listening to Standing on My Soapbox right here on Blog Talk Radio.
11 blocks from my door to your doorstep. 3 years later and it feels too close. I thought I broke the last of that breakdown the morning I sold your winter coat. It doesn't feel right when I'm grabbing a coffee. The same old spot, but I'm on my own. I feel okay in the day, but at nighttime, you know how I get when I'm alone. 'Cause my mind won't stop party. I caught myself counting on the way. Right when I stepped in the door to the party, I stepped outside to grab a smoke. You know how I get when I'm alone, no. 'Cause my mind won't stop, Mr. Ford.
Rabble with 11 Blocks. Guys, I have the amazing Stan Zimmerman here today, writer, director. I've got so much to talk about, Stan, but I want to go a little bit into, you got so much happening on Tello. We had the...
I'm the king of Tello.
You are the king of Tello, my friend. I think that is
I'm the
awesome.
The designated male of Tello.
Well, you did so good with Skirt Chasers, of course, and that was so fun to have Barry Boswick back and all those people in there.
And Meredith Baxter and Elizabeth Keener, and I got to work with my buddy Amanda Berth from Married with Children, and she directed four, and I got to direct one, and it was super, super fun. And then Kristen Baker, who you must have on your show, who created Tello Films, and it's literally the only outlet for lesbian content online. She's cornered the market, and she's doing some great programming, all different kinds of styles. And she said, I want to do your next project. What do you got? And I said, well, we've had this thing we've always wanted to do about bosses and assistants. And we call the show Sex and Execs. That's S-E-C-S. Get your mind out of the gutter, folks. We had originally sold the show to Lifetime. Kind of as two separate half hours that make up an hour, and it's
right.
A Rashomon feel. It's one day in the life of a women's wear athletic company called Cathletics, because Cath is played by Sandra Bernhardt, from Roseanne is the head of the company. And so we follow some scenes we see the same just from two different points of view. And it's four characters, and we have a wonderful cast, including Mindy Sterling from Austin Powers, who I've done a ton of theater with, and Natalie Dreyfus, who was in Rita Rocks, and Bane Gibby from Enlightened, and The Comeback, and who else? Oh, we have everybody.
So exciting. It's coming in March, and hopefully, I think we have you scheduled near March, and we'll have you bring Kristen back, because I'd love to talk. Otello is just amazing. I've put so many of my lesbian friends on. It's $5 a month for all this original content.
It's so cheap, and it's so wonderful. Oh, and Olivia Dabo from The Wonder Years. I've done two plays with her, and I finally got to direct her on film, and she plays a lesbian coming back to work after maternity leave. And she was a real tiger lady in The Office, you know, kind of one of those Amanda Priestley, really tough characters.
Right.
And she has a child, and she comes back, and then people start treating her like a mommy and not the same. And we thought that was such an interesting dynamic. And her old assistant is now an executive. So I don't know if you've ever worked in an office, but, you know, all those types of characters. Mindy Sterling plays one of those career assistants that have been there forever and knows where all the bodies are buried.
And she has the comic chops for that. Oh, my goodness. I can just imagine. Well, we're going to have an entire show dedicated to this when it comes March.
Oh,
I'm so
you.
Excited for you. This is going to be amazing.
It starts streaming March 19th on telefilms.com. And March will be my official lesbian month. I'm going to Klexicon in Las Vegas at the beginning of March, and I'm doing a panel there with Elizabeth Keener and Amanda Burse about, you know, the whole gay TV thing. And Klexicon is primarily a lesbian web convention. I think it's the first one of its kind. Yeah, so that's going to be really cool. And then the end of the month of March, I'm going back for my second year in a row. The only circuit party that I've been to is Dinosaur Weekend in Palm Springs. So,
nice.
Yeah, so that I had such a good time last year. It was really fun, and I got to hang out with Leah Delaria from Orange is the New Black, and that's when we kind of cemented our plan to she sings the theme song in Skirt Chasers, and was such oh my God, that woman can sing.
I think so, I have that.
People don't know
that
about her, but she's excellent and a really good jazz singer. She just interprets all these classics in such a really interesting way. Like she does her own jazz version of The Ballad of Sweeney Todd. Like you've never
Oh, heard I haven't heard of that. No.
Yes, you must listen to it. I mean, she's just, yeah, she's extremely gifted. And I would love, 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 love to work with her again on something.
Yeah, her jazz stylings and her scatting is it's just amazing. She's just incredible.
Yeah, it comes from just this inside her, you know, to be able to do that and to feel it. It's just, it's a force of nature.
Her personality is so cool. I talked about it actually, I think on the show last week or the week before when she broke up with her fiance of 4 years, and she did it in such a classy, clever way that it's just like, she's just always classy and great in every way she does everything. But she does an Instagram post, and it was just hilarious. Did you see her Instagram post on it?
No, how did she do it?
She took a picture of put her face and her fiance's face. Oh God, now I can't remember. I gotta look it up. Over someone else's body, standing next to it was Liza Minnelli and the David guy she married. They put their faces over them, standing next to Elizabeth Taylor and to Michael Jackson, and said, "Well, I guess we should have known we used this as our engagement photo. It wasn't gonna work." But it was just classy and funny and pure Lee Delaria. It was great. I remember talking about
it. We love her.
Oh, fantastic.
So check out her music if you don't know it.
So let's get back for a second to television reboots. What do you think about all these things that we got? We talked in a second. We got Queer Eye coming back. Will and Grace, are you looking forward to Will and Grace coming back?
I am. It was so cool that they did that political thing, that little clip that they
fun.
Did.
That
I thought that was wonderful.
That was
I actually want to reboot the Brady Bunch. I want to do the Brady Ladies, and I want Marsha, Jan, and Cindy to move to West Hollywood and not have a clue about what's going on. And they're
oh
still
my
in the
God.
70s. I would love to use the actresses from the movie. Christine Taylor, Jennifer Lee Cox, and Olivia Hack. I've talked to Betty Thomas, who directed the original movie that we did with her about doing it, and she loves the idea.
Was the Marsha from your movie the one that married Ben Stiller? Or?
Yes, and they were my neighbors, and they moved to New York, and she was so funny. I mean, she was Marsha Brady. I mean, there was just, she looked like her. She just had that sound as Gary Cole. It was so eerie that we just kept writing more and more, you know, for her and Jan, obviously. They were so funny together. And our other idea is we want to tell the greatest American love story, which would be Carol and Mike's love story, which nobody knows because the pilot of the original series starts off with them getting married. So we wanted to find out how they met. So so my dream would be Chris.
With Carol Brady
Chris,
just passing away, you have to
I
do
know.
This.
I wanted to start Chris Pratt and Anna Faris, I think, would be great as Mike and Carol.
Oh, my God, I love you. You are so good at that.
So if anybody from Paramount is listening, let's get this together.
Goodness gracious, that is phenomenal casting and a great story idea. I love that.
I'm a frustrated casting director, as all my friends know. And whenever I do a show and I hire a casting director, I said, okay, you're just going to have to like put up with me because you're going to be getting emails and texts at like 2 and 3 in the morning with ideas. And, you know, they laugh and it's fun. It's because I used to do it and it's just in me. I love actors and I love getting creative with who can play which roles.
Now, get me jealous here. You are obviously huge in television industry. And you've done so much in movies too. Do you just get trucks of movies delivered to you and all these screeners now that we're in award season? Does the UPS guy stop by every
Where's
day?
My
or
gift
what's...
bags. I need some gift bags. Because I'm in the Writers Guild and the TV Academy, I get all of those screeners. So I just watched Moonlight last night. Oh, my God, was that intense and touching and beautiful, and it was really quite extraordinary film.
That's everything I've heard and more, and
you
I haven't seen
it?
That one yet. I haven't seen that or La La Land yet. I'm saving those for the next couple weekends here. I'll be going to see it.
My next one I may watch tonight is Hidden Figures. I got to know Octavia Spencer. I see her at the gym every Saturday.
Do you really?
Yeah. So the interesting thing in Rita Rocks, Nicole Sullivan was cast in as the male lady. We had Tisha Campbell-Martin, Octavia Spencer, and Jasmine Guy as the three actresses that went to network to test for.
Wow.
Yeah. This was before the health and everything.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so
that's
any
crazy.
Way we went, we would have gotten gold, you know. And,
yes, you would have.
But that's who we narrowed it down to. And
goodness.
And that, you know, that's because I love casting and just they were all so fantastic. And, you know, it also matters with how each one played with, how they looked and played with Nicole Sullivan. And Tisha was fantastic. And, oh, my God, to be in recording studio with Tisha Campbell-Martin.
I can imagine.
That girl can sing, and she owns a club now you should go to when you're out in L.A.
Really?
Ben. And it's crazy and wild. She gets up there, and she sings, I think, once a week at least. And, it's right in Universal City, so it's kind of near where you'll be staying.
Yeah, I have been a huge Octavia Spencer fan forever. And when her and Wilson did the Red Band Society a couple years ago, it was right before I started the show, and I did the recaps for Red Band Society and for Madam Secretary, their premiere years for BroadwayWorld.com. So I did all their television recaps for them. And I wanted
she's
to have
just a good person. She's just, she lights up a room and she's so sweet. And, you know, I always bug her, like trying to get her to do things. And she never can because she's so busy, but she always writes back like right away, and I think that really just says a lot about a person.
Right. Oh, I love her. I need to get her on sometime because she is a hero. I wanted her and Wilson so bad my first season. It wasn't even funny because I just love both of them to death, but she is just, and you hear that everywhere. I mean, she co-hosts on the Kelly Ripa show, and Kelly just says, I love having you here. She just seems like the most normal person in the world. I love
mm-hmm.
that.
Well, I see her sweating at the gym every Saturday.
Well, tell her if she ever wants to go on the little LGBT radio show, you
okay.
know where she can go.
And I know Wilson from My So-Called Life because my friend Alan Poole, who directed The Backup Plan, was a producer on that show. So I remember meeting Wilson when he was just starting out. He was a baby.
Right.
Yeah.
No, he was a huge role model back then because he
yeah.
came out when it wasn't people coming out back then. That was crazy.
Right. And now look
wild.
At
I know.
Buff and shirtless on Facebook. Come on. Put some clothes on.
All the time. I'm telling you. Yeah, when I had the two of them on Red Band Society, I was going crazy when I was doing – I tried not to be biased in my writing every day for Broadway World each week, but it was tough because I liked those two a lot.
Yeah, I'm sorry the show didn't continue, but that's why you never know. You never know.
Exactly.
It doesn't matter.
You can have talent. That's the thing, too. You have great talent like that. What has been your most surprising casting where you thought the casting and the story just hit and it didn't go where you thought it was going to go?
You mean something that I worked on?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think where it did go was something like Roseanne, because we actually turned down being on staff for that the first season like idiots. I don't even remember why. I think they wanted us to commit to like 5 or 6 years, and they didn't have a cast. And she ended up waiting for John Goodman and Laurie Metcalf to become available, which I think was so smart, because she knew she had never done any acting. So why not surround yourself with the very best? You know, a lot of people would do the opposite because they'd want to be the center of attention. And to her credit, she really got the best. I had actually seen Laurie Metcalf in a play in New York when I was in college called Balm and Gilead. And she has – it's a famous play that has like a 5-page monologue of this character. And I went back like 3 or 4 times because it was really like a master class in acting. And, you know, in a small off-Broadway theater to see her up close. And if you ever get a chance to see her do live theater, you must, because she is probably one of the best, you know, live actresses that we have for stage.
Wow.
And so it was just so interesting. And then going to Moscow to recreate and find actors to do that, you know, how do you find and explain to them the quirkiness of Laurie Metcalf? Because they would bring in, you know, girls that were really pretty, and there was just something about her character and the way she played it. It was just so real and interesting and slightly off, you know?
That is wild. Yeah, it'd be impossible to – you see, it's like, I think Sandra Bernhardt the same way. I mean, what she brought to the show, she just – and she was Sandra Bernhardt kind of on the show.
Right.
But just her whole personality of Sandra Bernhardt is – and how do you – copy that at all? You can't. She just brings so much Sandra Bernhardt to a scene, I guess.
Yes, she does. Yeah, you have to go see, if you have never seen Sandra's shows live. I just saw her over the holidays. She was here in December at the Annenberg Theater in Beverly Hills, and she, you know, does her one-woman shows, and they're always so topical and so smart, and the songs are great, and it's an event you have to see in person.
I would love that. She has an amazing podcast, too. She's a great interviewer.
Yes, and she's so
cool. I love her podcast.
Yeah,
I listen to that when I can.
When I saw her in November when I was in New York and we had lunch, and it was obviously after the election, and we were just both devastated, to say the least. I'm a big news junkie, and I just literally, the day of the election, I turned off MSNBC, and I had had it with all of them and feel that they were complacent and, you know, they on many levels wanted someone like Trump to get in there for ratings, and I don't think challenged him. And, you know, it's just I think we're all just sad that hate won out at the end of the day.
Yeah, I think so. Let's go ahead and finish up on that. We're coming near the end of the hour. Let's talk a little bit about politics, because this is my one show to vent. I try not to vent on Left and Straight Show too much. That's
I
my,
know, we didn't vent. Where was the venting? We just talked about entertainment.
Well, this was our venting show, and we can vent here, but politics just drives me crazy. I'm the same way. I had to leave the day of the inauguration. I refused to be home all day.
Oh, I would not.
Because there would be enough clips
all.
Of it
no.
for the entire
I
time.
I don't
so
want to see him live moving. I will read about it in print or, you know, in articles and things online. I just want him to become a better person, but it's, you know, we've all given him so many chances, And I think that's where we thought we were, as, you know, progressive, open people and loving people, that we were past all this. And here we are literally going backwards into dividing people, and, you know, certain people are better, or Americans are better than other people in the world. I mean, come on. That's going backwards.
Right, and you try to give the benefit of the doubt, then you get the first day where all of those website things, you lose the LGBT page on the website, you use climate change on the website.
You know what, I'm really tired of everyone giving him the benefit of the doubt. How many times during, you know, each debate or this thing, we're going, well, okay, well, here's his chance. He has shown who he is over and over and over and over and over again.
Right.
And, you know, because people like ratings, it's like watching a car crash. And I feel like people are almost, they want to see, like, what is he going to crash and burn now? How crazy is he going to get? And that's what we've become now. Instead of, you know, putting someone in the office that is so well qualified, you know, I want someone, you know, whoever you hire, if you're having someone to fix your car or a doctor, you want the best in the business to get something done.
I can't understand the lying. I'm embarrassed by the lying. And it's like, how can you...
Well, I feel bad for the children. This is what... How do they look at this and say, you, Mom or Dad, you told us not to lie, and here's this person lying and making fun of handicapped people and, you know, people that are different than he is, and that's okay? It's not okay.
It's horrible. It's horrible. I don't know how they can get away with it. I don't know why they do the pettiness. I don't know why. I don't know if you saw today. The big thing today is on the website at whitehouse.gov. On the website of the White House, he has a press release with 34 quotes, or I don't know, it's 14, 15 quotes of all the people praising him. Praise for President Trump's bold action is the headline for it, for immediate release. And he writes his own press release on how great he is.
Of course. I mean, there's just, I mean, we need like a doctor or therapist in there to check this person out, because there's obviously something not quite right. And
yeah,
I wish the media
would
stop.
It's more than narcissistic tendencies. It's narcissistic embeddedness,
yes,
or something.
They need
crazy
to stop booking Kellyanne Conway on TV shows. It's ridiculous. We just have to put an end to that. You know, if you see her on, just turn off the channel. It's just, if someone is going to not answer questions then, or lie or change the subject,
she's like a train wreck that I can't look away from, because she does.
You have to look away. We all have to stop giving them
horrible
air.
Because you know she's lying to your face, but it's like, God, she does it so well.
But she literally said all these things against him in the election, and then now she's saying these things. I mean,
I know when
can't.
She's with what's his face? The one just as bad, Ted Cruz, when she's running Ted Cruz's
all
campaign.
All of them. It's so hypocritical,
like,
what people will do for power and money. It's just, you know, at a certain point you just have to care about other individuals. Please.
All right. Well, we got a little bit of ranting there. Let's finish
yes,
up.
Yes, we did.
What
you wanted
you
your soapbox.
What can you tell me about the little picture of the theater in New York City? I've been dying for about 5 days now.
I can't talk about that yet. I'll come back on to tell you all
you
about that.
You are killing me.
I'm killing you. I've got two big secrets that I'm hoping will come through that will knock your socks off. So let's put some good energy around that. I think it's important that we all go out and make art and make love, and that's how we're going to get through this.
Well, if my listeners aren't following you now, they need to, just to get these little cryptic things. Dan took a fun trip to New York. He was pictured with Michael Urie, of course, and we have this little cryptic picture of a theater. Give everyone your social media so they can follow you like I do and be obsessed like I am.
You should be. Stalk me, please. ZimmermanStan.com everywhere. On
ZimmermanStan, it is.
Yes.
Stan Zimmerman, thank you so much for standing on my soapbox with me today. I really do appreciate it. We're going to have you back in early March with all your friends from Sex and Execs. And you have a great rest of the week, my friend.
You too. See you when you're out in L.A.
I will be there soon. Go ahead and stay on the line here for me a second. Guys, we'll be back in just a little bit to finish it up here. This is our good friend Trevor Page with Warrior. Be a warrior out there. Let's not take this administration lying down. Thank you.
to believe into the depths of darkness, as dark as it can be. I will hold you tight and we will rise up with the sun. With my hand in yours, companion, we'll fight until we've won. Can't you see it? The beauty. I'll keep trying to open up your eyes, and I won't conceal.
Guys, thanks for listening to Standing on My Soapbox. I want to really thank my special guest, Dan Zimmerman, for tuning in. Be sure to follow him on social media. The guy is an amazing director and writer. So many great ideas for so many great projects. Next week, we're going to have Michael Vega, the actor, will be joining me as my special co-host. We didn't even get to Oscars today and so much other things going on. Stan also has a play he's directing in L.A. It's out there now, and if you have a chance, try to go by and see it. And I have it, there's a promo for it, and if you're looking at the live show, if you go to the Blog Talk Show, you'll be able to see it. And hopefully it's called Synthesis, and you'll have a chance. I think it runs for next Sunday, so be sure to check out his play if you're in the LA area. Guys, thanks for listening in. We'll have Michael Vega next week. You listen to Standing on My Soapbox. It's time to get off my soapbox and have a bite to eat. Have a great night. Bye-bye.